versus Nene Hilario, case number 08CA470. Are the parties all here and ready to proceed? The second case is Michael Hall versus Farmers Insurance Exchange. Your council president in that case. Thank you. Let me make a short record. The arguments in all the cases have been set for 15 minutes per side. The arguments are timed. There is a module on the lectern that will tell you with red, green, and yellow lights where you are in the arguments. You have 10 minutes with green light, 5 minutes with a yellow or orange light, and red light is the argument is over. There's also a reverse countdown clock available to you there, so you can keep track of how much time you've used and how much time you have left. If the appellant wants assistance reserving time for rebuttal, let me know, and I will try to assist you in that, throw something at you, wave at you, do something so that you'll know that you've reached your reserved time. Your time is limited. We suggest you use it most productively, and by using it most productively, we mean we think you should go directly to the legal arguments involved in the case. We have read the briefs. We understand the facts of your case. As set forth in the briefs, we understand the authorities as set forth in your brief. One of us has been into the record to some extent. So if you go directly to your legal arguments, you might very well use your time most productively. We record the arguments digitally. There's a microphone on the lectern for that purpose. We would recommend or request that you stay near the lectern so that we can clearly pick up your voice. We sometimes use those recordings in the preparation of an opinion. In addition to that, they are now, or at least last I knew, placed on the internet within a day or two following the argument. So if you want to hear them, you can do so over the internet. So it's important that the sound be clear. In addition, the lectern is adjustable by toggle switches on your right. If you find it inconveniently or uncomfortably high or low, you can adjust it with those toggle switches. And lastly, but by no means leastly, if anyone has electronic devices, telephones, pagers, iPhones, Blackberries, or such equipment, please turn it off during the arguments. If you're expecting an emergency call or have some particular concern, put it on silent and don't respond to it until after you've left the room. We don't want that to disturb either counsel or the bench in its consideration of the case. Any questions? Hearing none, you may proceed, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes. Hopefully, I'll be okay. Able to do that. But, Your Honor, if you wave at me if I get there, I appreciate it.
I'll wad up a piece of paper and throw it at you.
All right. That's fine. This is a very unusual case. Having practiced law for 32 years, I've never seen anything like this. Obviously, during our time as professionals, we end up having professional relationships. I've had lunches with lawyers and judges for many, many years, some of which are close acquaintances, some of which are friends. In this particular case, as you know the facts, and I'm just going to briefly go through them, the allegation is that somehow there was a close relationship with Mr. Jacobs. I'd used Mr. Jacobs as an expert witness. He and I had never been to each other's homes. We were not close friends. In the break at the arbitration, he asked me how I was doing. My mother had recently passed away. He gave me a hug. I gave him a hug. There's nothing here that would indicate anything that would allow a disqualification of an arbitrator. Mr. Jacobson.
Isn't that a decision peculiarly left up to the American Arbitration Association?
It is, but there must be transparency. There can't be a star chamber, Your Honor. Here, they have rules for that.
Where is that requirement in their rules?
Well, the rules say under AAA Rule 17A, it talks about any grounds for disqualifications provided by applicable law under Section A3. It says an arbitrator shall be impartial, independent, and shall perform his or her duties with diligence and good faith and be subject to disqualification for 1, partiality or lack of independence. There was no showing there was no hearing. Under Section 2, inability or refusal to perform his or her duties with diligence and good faith, absolutely no showing. We requested it. We requested a hearing. Or 3, any grounds for disqualification provided by the applicable law.
Yeah, you haven't answered my question. Where in the rules of the AAA is there a right to a hearing on that issue, or for that matter, full disclosure?
Well, again, the only rule is the rule I'm citing to you, is the rule that talks about the disqualification. Your Honor, under these circumstances, if we allow a party, which they admit was losing an arbitration, to go to the AAA without any grounds, without any basis for disqualification, to have an arbitrator thrown out, we in essence are allowing a star chamber, which is subject to questions of impropriety, not only mere suspicion, but impropriety. The AAA today sits, because of the public policy toward arbitration, and because of the fact that many, many corporations, NBA, NBA clubs, have arbitration clauses in them. If, in fact, they are allowed to just do whatever they want without transparency and openness, without the right for a hearing, that violates due process. And due process is one of the things that is, you know, essential in our system.
Well, if I remember the facts, your client had this contract drawn. Your client chose arbitration as a means of resolving disputes and chose the AAA as the means by which that would be accomplished.
Sure.
Now, knowing the rules of the AAA, how are you denied due process?
You're denied due process if they don't have a hearing. If you're allowed, I mean, if a judge is moved to be recused, and it happens not very often, but I've seen it happen, and you don't have a hearing on any grounds, isn't that not a violation of due process, Your Honor?
I mean, the arbitrators are not required to follow the law either.
Well, in this case, they were and they didn't. That's another violation of due process. They were required pursuant to the agreement to follow the law of Ohio. They did not do that. They were if we're not going to force due process on a arbitration, are we not allowing corporations to, and I understand in this case, but the issue is bigger than this case, Your Honor. If we allow a AAA or any arbitration, whether it's JAG or JAMS, to just unilaterally deny due process, to throw out the arbitrator midstream, put a new arbitrator in that no one's agreed upon, not take live evidence. He wasn't even sure he'd even read. When we talked to him in the record, he said he skimmed the testimony of the plaintiff.
You're moving on to a different point. If I could get back to the point of disqualification, you made a representation that I had not picked up on. You said there was conceded that the other side was losing.
Yes.
That conceded?
Yes, it was conceded. And in fact, in their response, they say, and this is their quote, "The course of the first 4 days of the hearing had led our client to question Ms. Frick's ability to be impartial in the case, a belief we, as his attorney, share. We can certainly catalogue in detail the grounds for this conclusion, if requested to do so by the AAA, after we receive the court reporter's transcript."
I don't read that as a concession they're losing. I think that reads as a concern about impartiality. I don't read that as a concession of losing. I think that's an overstatement.
Well, it may be an overstatement, Your Honor, and I apologize for that, but quite frankly, to say that in their specific thing that they saw something and then not come forward with the evidence of what they claim to be the impartiality. I mean, I never met Ms. Frick. I didn't know Ms. Frick. We both agreed. Ms. Frick had represented Mr. Schuchat's partner. We still understood that she had integrity and honesty based on her reputation, and we went forward.
Nobody's questioned that, have they?
Well, they certainly have if they removed her, and we don't know how they removed her. They're saying she's impartial, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, the representations, as I understand it, made by Mr. Nene, was that you had told her in the hearing that you were a friend of her senior partner, that you met the senior partner, you embraced, you went to lunch together.
Correct.
Those are things that might cause one to be concerned about impartiality. And it seems to me that that's what the letter said.
Your Honor, that is, first of all, I said that I knew Mr. Jacobs We are not friends. He's never been to my house, never been to his house. My mother had just passed away. He gave me a hug when he heard that. If that shows some sort of bias, then we're all in trouble here. We don't live in a very civil society. He and I went to lunch. We did not discuss the arbitration. Never was that arbitration discussed. Mr. Jacobs has integrity, and I have integrity. I've been doing this for 32 years. I would never, ever discuss the arbitration. And for mere allegations, without a hearing, without evidence, without AAA, my concern, Your Honor, is that there's more to this than we know. I'm asking you to remand this to Judge Stern for him to find out. Was there something? Was there conversations with AAA? Did the NBA get involved? Did the Denver Nuggets get involved? Who did they talk to? How did they choose this arbitrator? What was the basis for the disqualification? Aren't those things that we should all be concerned about when we sit up here and we have a system that's under attack by the public for lack of transparency? This would never be allowed in a courtroom.
Counsel, your argument seems to be that you've been denied due process, but you were allowed to participate in writing in this decision, which is the same way that your opponent was allowed to participate. Do you have any authority that says that the right to be heard necessarily involves a hearing, that it has to be conducted in a hearing, that the decision maker can't make the decision on the basis of written submissions?
He certainly can make that decision, Your Honor, but to have half it heard at a hearing by live testimony and the other half by transcript, I believe does deny due process. Is there a case?
A decision to remove the arbitrator, not,
oh, I'm sorry,
not the continued arbitration.
But there are more due process issues. But on that issue, the answer is we need to have a fair and impartial arbitrator. We all can agree on that. I can't tell you whether or not the arbitrator put in place was fair or impartial. We believe he was not impartial. But in order to have the removal of an arbitrator who both sides agreed to, there must be some basis for the removal. Otherwise, if we allow this to go on in a courtroom, I mean, this is a courtroom. They sit as a courtroom. They're a judicial tribunal.
Counsel, I think you said some basis. There has to be some basis. That means a scintilla. And we have the letter. Isn't the letter some basis?
No. No, it's not any basis. And a mere allegation is no basis. Well, the mere allegation, Your Honor, I have thousands of lawyers that I know at Holland and Hart. I go to lunch with them, Bill Bianco, at Davis Graham and Stubbs, at every large firm in this thing. I've been doing this for 32 years. If that means that their partners are not allowed to sit as arbitrators or can be disqualified because I went to lunch with them, I go to lunch with judges. And they sit on my cases.
So your argument is that they misapplied Rule 17A, but 17B says that their application of 17A is conclusive, isn't it? I mean, we're not a court of appeals reviewing their application of 17A. You'd agree with that?
I agree with that, Your Honor. But the problem is that if this is not remanded, it does create a tremendous possibility for corruption. That's the best way I can put it, Your Honor, is corruption. When you're allowed to remove an arbitrator in the middle of an arbitration.
This is a private matter. This is a contractual matter. If this occurred in the courtroom, I might well agree with you.
Well,
that there needs to be a hearing, there needs to be fact-finding, perhaps even before a neutral judge. All that's available to you in the courtroom, but or in the court system, along with appeals, of whether the arbitrator applied the correct law or applied the law at all. But we're specifically barred from inserting ourselves in an arbitration.
See, and I don't think you are. In the cases we cited in our brief, that's why they have to go to court to get this judgment rendered. And that's where you do have the opportunity to step in and say, we are not going to condone this. And at a minimum, Judge Stern needs to look into what the AAA got, what they saw, who contacted them, and have a hearing to determine whether there was some sort of corruption or unethical behavior.
But it's your burden under the statute to show the award was procured by undue means. Is that the claim?
That's correct. That's okay. Correct.
And you've hypothesized that there may be corruption, there may be this, there may be that, but on the record, each side had an opportunity to make their positions heard and known. You didn't have an oral hearing. You didn't have a finding of fact. But you had an opportunity to participate in the process. It was not a secret process to that extent, was it?
But we were told it was secret about the removal. I appreciate that, Judge. We were told it's secret. We can't tell you how we removed her or why we removed her or what the position was.
We have to give an explanation of our reasoning for removing her.
That's what they said. We said we just did what we did, whether we had a basis or not. I will retain the rest of my time. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate it.
Morning. My name is Frank Shookin. I'm here on behalf of Nene. My bar number is 27857.
Is Nene a first name or last name?
It's his. It's actually his name that he uses for that has been that is his name now. He's changed his name.
Okay.
He actually was born Mabinar Hilario, but we refer to him as Nene for this purpose. I'd like to note at the outset that Mr. Berg said that he hired Paul Jacobs as an expert witness. I'd like to just state for the court that that's the first time I've been made aware of that. The disclosure by Ms. Frick was that the Berg Simpson firm hired Paul Jacobs, and that's a firm of some 40 or more lawyers. So stating that Mr. Jacobs was retained by the Berg Simpson firm is not the same as telling me that Mr. Jacobs was retained by Michael Berg. I'd like to respond to a few points that Mr. Berg made. This was certainly not a star chamber. There was notice from the AAA to Mr. Berg of the fact that we had submitted a letter requesting removal of an arbitrator under Rule 17. The AAA gave Mr. Berg's Santos's counsel opportunity to make a submission in response to the letter that I sent to the AAA. There was not a hearing, but there was a telephone call. There was an opportunity to make known any response they had to our letter. There certainly was due process in this case. It's not necessary to hold a hearing in this situation. The AAA, I think, is responsible for administering its own rules, and they did so in this case in a proper, in an absolutely proper manner. There was nothing wrong with the removal of Ann Frick as arbitrator pursuant to the Rule 17 process.
And what particular clause clause under Rule 17A would you say that she was properly removed under?
We had a concern about her not being impartial.
It's not an appearance. It doesn't say appearance. It says impartial in fact. Are you saying that your concern, I thought, was there's a question about her appearance, and we're not sure whether she can be impartial or not.
I think we were being gracious. I think we had a serious concern about the impartiality of the arbitrator. I think what happened during this proceeding hammered that home to us was extraordinary. I defer to Mr. Berg in his 32 years of practice, but I will tell you that when I'm in a hearing with a client at the lunch break, I'm doing something on behalf of the client. I think it's unusual to break to have lunch with somebody else. This was done in a very public manner. The point was to let the arbitrator know of this relationship. At least that's how we interpreted it. That's how we presented it to the AAA. In fact, we were concerned about the impartiality of the arbitrator, and that's why we took the extraordinary step to ask to have the arbitrator removed. I'd like to emphasize for the court, however, that in this case, you're being asked to vacate an arbitration award that was rendered by a very qualified arbitrator selected by the AAA pursuant to its Rule 11, where there's a deadlock in terms of appointment of an arbitrator. I commend all the judges to read Judge McKee's arbitration award in this case. It's very well reasoned. It's very well thought out. It's very clear that he looked at all of the evidence that was available. He read transcript of the hearing days before Ann Frick. I don't think that's a problem. In fact, Ann Frick was asked by the parties and agreed to review transcripts of deposition testimony in lieu of live witness testimony. I don't think there's anything wrong with reading a transcript of a hearing. But I think if you look at Judge McKee's decision, you will see that it's a well-reasoned decision, that the appellant actually can't find anything to identify to attack Judge McKee's decision. I think the only thing they can attack is that they didn't know him. We didn't know him either.
There's one limitation, I think, at least we've struggled with it, on your comment, and that is whether or not the arbitrator or the administrative law judge or the trial judge, in reviewing transcripts, made decisions based upon the credibility of witnesses in those transcripts. And I have reviewed the findings, and I can't find that to be the case. Can you? Whether the arbitrator decided the case based upon his failure to believe the credibility of witnesses whose testimony was in the transcripts.
I don't think that's the case. I think the arbitrator had ample opportunity to review the two most important witnesses in this case, which are Nene and Joe Santos. The arbitrator had live testimony from Joe Santos, ample testimony and an opportunity to review his credibility, to assess his credibility. Other witnesses, we included in our submission to Judge Stern a chart of the witnesses that were presented, basically the course of the hearing, and I think you'll identify the fact that Mr. Santos had ample opportunity to present live testimony, to present his own live testimony to Judge McKee, and Judge McKee had an opportunity to assess his credibility. I don't think it's plausible to suggest that the arbitrator didn't have a full opportunity because he read some transcript testimony. If you'll identify, you can identify the witnesses. And in fact, we had several witnesses which we presented to Ann Frick on one of the days of the hearing, and so that in a sense we didn't have an opportunity to present certain witnesses. Well, we didn't take an opportunity to present certain witnesses live because they had been presented to Ann, presented before Ann Frick. I'd like to emphasize as well that there was an opportunity for rebuttal witnesses, which there was ample opportunity for rebuttal witnesses and plenty of time for that, but Mr. Santos's counsel declined to present rebuttal witnesses, and we certainly did not run out of time in terms of the hearing schedule.
But basically, the way it worked out was the Santos affirmative case went on live before Frick, but only on not live before McKee.
That's absolutely not correct. If you look at the hearing, if you look at the chart we have on the course of the hearing, we presented several witnesses. Santos presented witnesses. We presented witnesses before Ann Frick as well, and we didn't have an opportunity. We had an expert witness who came from Cleveland. He was in front of Ann Frick.
But the Santos case had ended by the time.
No, the Santos case, the first witness before Judge McKee was Nene, called by Santos as a witness. So it's absolutely not correct, and it's a misrepresentation of the course of the hearing to suggest that it is as simple as you described it, and which is how it's been described, which is that the plaintiff's affirmative case was before Ann Frick, and the respondent's case was before Judge McKee. That is absolutely not what happened, and it was quite clear that they had opportunity to put on rebuttal witnesses if they elected to, but the first witness before Judge McKee was Nene, called as a witness by Santos. And
as I understand it, there was no objection to the procedure that occurred before Judge McKee, that is, that he would read the transcripts and
that's absolutely correct. There was no objection to that process as a way to move this along. This case has been pending for quite a long time. I think the AAA and the parties were interested in bringing it to a resolution. But as attorney for Nene, I simply could not sit back with what was happening in terms of the lack of impartiality on behalf of the arbitrator in the initial part of the proceeding. And I think that I'd like to have you consider the facts that are described in the submission to the AAA with respect to information we learned only at the hearing and the conduct of the hearing and efforts to efforts which we believe were going to be were successful to remove the impartiality of the arbitrator.
Hey, to what extent do we have to assure ourselves that the AAA decision removing Ms. Frick, in fact, was correct?
I think you only have to assure yourself that the AAA followed its procedures, and I think that they did so.
And the procedures spelled out where? 17B?
In 17B. There was, well, 17B makes it conclusive, but there was notice. What happened was we had formed a very serious concern about the impartiality of Ms. Frick and the position that she was in because of the active efforts by Santos counsel to influence the proceeding. We made a submission to the AAA. The AAA gave notice of, and in fact, I want to make this very clear, the letter that I sent to the AAA requesting removal was copied to Santos's counsel. I have no idea how they can claim that this was a star chamber or this was secret. We certainly didn't send the letter to the Denver Post, but this is an arbitration. Everybody,
Ms. Frick, I guess, was
we didn't send it to Ms. Frick. I was instructed by the AAA not to send it to Ms. Frick. If I'd send it to Ms. Frick, I think it would be impossible for the proceeding to, for, If I'd sent it to Ms. Frick, there's no way that we would have been able to continue with Ms. Frick as the arbitrator, I think.
Well, you have to do that with court. You want a disqualified judge, you take a shot, and the judge rejects it. You have to make your position known to the judge normally, and at least any procedure I'm familiar with.
Okay, well, the AAA procedure was that it was not to be just sent to Ms. Frick.
You mentioned we have to assure ourselves that you followed or AAA followed their procedures. I don't see any procedures in this. I see 17A talks about the grounds for removal, and 17B says conclusive. Well, what are the procedures? Where did we get notice? And, you know,
There was notice and an opportunity to be heard.
I know, in fact, there was, but you said we have to make sure they follow their procedures. I don't see any AAA procedures in this context.
Well, if hypothetically, if I'd sent a letter to the AAA but not copied it to Mr. Santos's counsel, and the AAA had then made a ruling based only on my letter without allowing Santos's counsel or allowing the other side to have any opportunity to comment, I think that would be a matter that the court ought to be concerned about. The word due process is thrown around here. Due process, I think, is satisfied in this case. There was notice to the other side. There was an opportunity to be heard. I might mention as an aside that they didn't even use all the time that they had to prepare their response. They submitted affidavits. I can't understand what would be gained by a hearing at that point. The AAA provided that due process which is necessary to make the hearing work.
What could be gained? There were disputed facts in the affidavits, weren't there? About whether they discussed the case at lunch, for example.
No, there's a statement in Mr. Berg's affidavit contains a statement that the only comment he can recall. Mr. Berg's affidavit contains a statement that he spoke with Mr. Jacobs about the arbitration. He made a comment regarding Ms. Frick's. He made a complimentary comment about Ms. Frick's conduct of the arbitration. To me, that is a discussion of the case that is simply inappropriate in this situation. And I could not sit by and allow my client to be, well, we didn't know that he'd discussed the case for certain at that when we made the request. We only found that out in Mr. Berg's affidavit.
So there were no disputed facts in terms of the party submission to AAA?
Well, we had been, Mr. Berg said during the hearing, he had told Ms. Frick that he shared baseball tickets with Jacob, that he shared Paul Jacobs' baseball tickets. To me, the substance of that arrangement is really not relevant. The fact is that he made that comment to Ms. Frick. That's what's important. It turns out from the affidavit that was submitted by Mr. Berg and by the accountant that he shares space with that, in fact, a Paul Jacobs set of tickets was used by the Berg-Simpson firm. You know, there's a dispute about how you would characterize that relationship, but from our perspective, the only thing that's important is that Mr. Berg told Ms. Frick and in the presence of ourselves, that he shared tickets. And he made a very major point about letting her know and letting us know that he was having lunch with her. I don't think there are any disputed facts with respect to the disqualification. I think it's interesting to note, though, that it's not necessary to have a hearing in order to vacate an arbitration award. We didn't have a hearing before Judge Stern, and it's not necessary. I think due process doesn't require that. I think if you look at, I think you want to assure yourself that the AAA is not, that there's not, there are things that you might consider in terms of reviewing a AAA decision to disqualify. But I think if the AAA has allowed each party to make a full and complete submission of any information that they think is relevant, I think the AAA has, should be left alone to make its own decisions in this situation. I think it would be a very serious matter for the court to interfere too deeply in what the AAA does in terms of administering its rules. I think that we're not suggesting that the court has no authority or no responsibility to review arbitral awards, but I think in this case the AAA followed rules which allowed each party to have a full opportunity to participate. But I think that we're missing the point there on that as well. There is no causal link between Judge McKee's adverse decision against Joe Santos and the removal of Ann Frick. There is no right to a biased arbitrator. Mr. Santos had an opportunity to present his case fully in front of Judge McKee. He could have called any witnesses who he had called previously. We could have called witnesses who we had called previously. The fact that Judge McKee relied on transcript had an equal effect on both parties. It's not correct to say that it was so simple that Mr. Santos presented his case, the arbitrator was removed, and we presented our case live to the arbitrator. Mr. Santos had plenty of time sitting in front of Judge McKee to make his presentation, and any other witnesses who could have, who they might have wanted to have live testimony, they could have recalled. We had ample time left at the end of this hearing. There was nothing wrong with Judge McKee's decision, and it would be unfortunate and it would be improper, we believe, for this court to review, to abandon Judge McKee's decision and force the parties to proceed otherwise. The most important fact is that there was a fair arbitration with an unbiased arbitrator. There's no question of any bias on behalf of Judge McKee. So we would ask you to affirm the decision of Judge Stern. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just quickly respond. One, I let him know I was going. My mother just died. Paul said, can you go to lunch? We talked about losing our parents. That's what we talked about. I let them know to see if anybody had an objection that I would go to lunch with Paul Jacobs. I said, I'm going to go with Mr. Jacobs. Anybody have any objection to it? No one raised any eyebrow. No one said a thing. This is a dangerous, dangerous decision if allowed to stand. Let me just point to two things. One, the court can, I mean, this is, we do have a decision, and it's not out of this court, but it's in our pleadings. It's that BB Medical Center versus Insight, 750.
No, the failure to disqualify, though. That was a case where you arguably had a decision by a biased arbitrator, right?
Right, but what they talked about was the procedure, and what the judge said there was, it is hardly seems neutral for AAA to resolve a sensitive and fact-intensive matter without conducting a hearing, and instead by adopting wholesale the view of the facts advocated by one of the party's attorneys in a letter based on that attorney's second and third hand knowledge. And if the AAA engaged in a fact-finding inquiry secretly without according the parties the opportunity to participate, that method of decision-making in and of itself renders the decision subject to vacatur. Here we have a situation where Judge McKee said on the record, what do we even have a record here for? There's no court of appeals that's going to rule on this thing. He told us, hurry up, get this done. We had a stipulation to use the rules of evidence, the federal rules of evidence. He said, I'm throwing that out. I don't know whether he's impartial. I'll never know. My client will never know because we're not going to be allowed to have a hearing in front of Judge Stern unless you send it back and say to AAA, give us your reasoning. What happened? What was the basis? Your Honor, there is no procedure. They have no procedure. They list the grounds, but then there's no procedure as to what you do if you allow this. And I know you can affirm it and have a non-published opinion, and this thing will never see the light of day. I am saying to you, as someone who is an officer of the court, if we allow arbitrations to go on and allow one party to make a bold accusation, to remove an arbitrator who is of the highest esteem of integrity in this legal community. I've never met Ms. Frick before this arbitration. I didn't know who she was. I didn't know anything about her. To allow this to go on without sending it back to Judge Stern, all we want is to have him do the remanded to have a hearing, an investigation as to what the basis of the removal was. I think we've outlined the other due process problems. Your Honor, you're correct. We were not allowed to be heard, and he wasn't able to assess the credibility. In addition, I have just 16 seconds, but when we originally chose Ms. Frick, we got 20 names. When she was removed, we were given one name of a very prominent plaintiff attorney, one name of a very prominent defense attorney that we never would agree on. Why didn't we get 20 names? Why didn't we get...
As I recall, there's indication in the record that these were the only two people available to proceed on the 17th of September. Now, that's AAA's representation, and when you turned them down, they went out of state.
Your Honor,
I
do not know if they were the only two available. We would have certainly taken another date to get more.
You ought to be able to inquire into that, too.
I do. I think that this is important to make sure that we have an honest system. If we allow arbitrators to rule by different rules, by their internal rules, which violate what we as lawyers and judges understand to be proper rules for recusal or dismissal or disqualification, we are running into a very, very dark tunnel. And I appreciate the opportunity to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank both counsel for their arguments and their briefs, and a written opinion will issue in due course. We are now ready to hear Hall versus Farmers Insurance Exchange, and we can proceed with that as soon as counsel is set up and ready.